Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello, everyone, and welcome along to the RTGA podcast. Ursula Jacob will be along a little bit later on to chat hurling, but Enda McGinley is with myself and Rory to look back on weekend one of the football championship, which I think we'll say was a roaring success. Enda, I know you were in Clonus, but not just there. I think the results that you saw with Wicklow and Waterford as well, maybe not the weekend we were expecting, but like for football fans, it was brilliant.
No, certainly, like walking into Clonus yesterday and meeting everybody, you're obviously there a wee bit earlier and you're getting out of the car and it's cooler, it doesn't feel like summer. Yeah. And you're only after the great league final between Dublin and Derry, and everybody's still sort of next thing you're into the provincial final. And really the mood was one of it just feels too early. And there is that narrative anyway. Was there the build-up for it? You walked across the Clonus pitch and the grass was much longer than it would usually be for a championship match, probably because the groundsmen were trying to save it in the rain. Maybe couldn't get on it to give it its extra cuts. And so it all felt not very challenging. It felt like, oh, this is going to be a grind. You heard stories, it's going to be a low crowd. There was a rally on in Monaghan yesterday and that would have taken away. So all of those factors come by. And yet this was by far probably the best opening round fixture. But truth be told, when the games got going, it was I loved that game yesterday in Clonus. Yes, it had its quiet spell, surely, but games need that bit of dullness within it too, and then the brilliant spells and the way Cavan went at it, and obviously it was a bit of an upset. And then you get home, but the much maligned Leinster Championship, great result down there, particularly for Wicklow. Waterford again turning up, great result over there. So you sort of came away thinking, and you've seen what it meant to those teams. You've seen the joy, you've seen the celebration, maybe a small number of supporters on the pitch, but it meant the absolute world to them. And here we are, thank God, there was a lot there to take away from a first weekend that we all weren't expecting too much from. Yeah. But there were brilliant stories, brilliant upsets, brilliant boosts for teams that have took a bit of a hammer and had a tough earlier spring. So no positives all around, not for the beaten teams, obviously, but for us looking in, there's positives all around.
I think that's what it is, Rory, because it's not just everybody already knew the Ulster Championship was going to be great because it is every year. I think it's the much maligned Leinster and Munster Championships, as Enda said. I think when you get results in those, that's when you suddenly go, maybe hold on to the Al Provincial Championship after all, you know.
Yeah. I think there was nothing brought home the difference between league and championship then. The results yesterday, just the sheer difference in mindset, having to produce it on the day. I'm a fan of that, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very old-fashioned, a very old-fashioned value, and maybe we need to move with the times. But, you know, the fact that, okay, Wicklow, we're going into Portlaoise yesterday, knowing that Westmeath had played the week before, might be slightly still distracted by having won Division 3 and whatever celebrations Desi could afford to give them, and they turned them over. It's an amazing victory for Oisín McConville and for Wicklow. And would you give them a chance against Kildare in a Leinster semi-final? You would. You absolutely would. No, look, at forewarned, it'll be forearmed. Even down, you move down to Munster, the celebrations, which I only saw last night on the TV of Tom O'Connell, that's the image of the weekend for me. He was like gladiator there, the way he was standing on the edge of the square after scoring those two goals. But that was incredible as well. Like, Waterford football really, and Munster football in general, gets an awful hard time. But I've had this conversation before, and Enda, you've heard me say it, I don't actually believe Munster football is as weak as people make it out to be. I just don't think it gets the same glamour or profile because the hurling version of it is so much more high profile, and it's the one that the supporters generally tend to follow. But having said that, it was still two of the teams at the very bottom. And for the story to come out there, Waterford, I think it was their first win over Tipperary since 1988, their first Munster Championship win since 2010, and their first championship win of any kind in 6 years. Amazing stories again. And I think that's what the provincial championships do. I mean, like, we had it last year as well. Offaly, remember Offaly knocked Meath out of the Leinster Championship early on. You will get, like, New York knocking Leitrim out. You will get these stories in the provincial championships with the teams that are playing at a similar level to each other. We'll get them. The problem is the big dogs in all of these championships sort of loom very large in terms of the shadow. And I think that's probably what's killed the sense of joy for a lot of people.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that these victories shouldn't be celebrated anyway. Correct. Because I do think Rory's right. You can still have those moments where they're playing teams of a similar caliber and have big days out like this.
Absolutely. Like, I think it is so critical. We all know we want those glamour ties at the top of the game, but the game is only healthy. And the same I would have always argued in terms of Dublin and in a much, much bigger conversation about the funding and the equality we need to try to, and almost I would be saying sort of fund additionally the lower level teams, because the closer teams are, the better things are. For teams working at the lower level, and I was obviously having managed with Antrim, you become acutely aware of the effort that those players have to get put in completely against the grain. There is zero glory about being a Waterford County footballer. That is something you're doing out of a personal conviction, out of hopefully a pride to be linked with the county and trying to make the very best of yourself. You'll get very little credit from your club mates. You'll get some support from your family, but they'll question you plenty of times maybe as to why. So for them to go and do that, I think for teams at that level, like you always hear it, and it always grinds me gears, particularly when I was with Antrim, you'd hear some Tyrone players say coming out, and this would, you'd hear this across the board, across the bigger counties. The interviewer would ask, do you think you can win it? The response is, I wouldn't be here if we didn't think we can win the All-Ireland. Right, well, why not? Why would you not, if you can't win the All-Ireland, which the vast majority of teams can't, are you saying you wouldn't then tug out for your county? How does that, your dedication to your county and your game, and then contrast that with what the Division 3 and Division 4 teams, the likes of Waterford's, like I read Damien Lawler's books a couple of years ago, working on a dream about the Waterford, and I loved it. It was a cracking book, but it really put you in the different world that it is, and the dedication those players have to show, and for them to keep going back and keep going back, and then to get those days yesterday. Like, I love Paul Shankey's interview after yesterday. And he just, you know, this makes it all worthwhile. What's rare is beautiful, I suppose, as they say. But I have nothing but the height of respect for the players at that level. They are brilliant, brilliant footballers. Depending where they're born is your station in life. Unfortunately, in GAA, you can't change it a huge degree. And yes, there's a Derry story of going 4-1, and yet, but we know that's not the reality for the vast majority. For the vast majority, it's days like this, but it was just brilliant to see it, and just complete hats off to the players and the management teams that through tough, tough times have stood at it, and they, by God, they've earned a day like yesterday.
Yeah.
Jackie, just one small thing as well that I think is important for people to sometimes be aware in relation to Waterford football. I remember Paul Kerrigan, when Nemo were going well in Munster clubs, would always make the point, he'd say, like, we really struggle against the Waterford teams. And the reason is, like, Stradbally, Brick Walsh, you've seen Brick Walsh playing football. I mean, so Stradbally, Denier, really, really good club sides. The club football scene in Waterford is not as bad as people might think, and the reason is that most of those guys are dual players, so like you would have proper senior inter-county hurlers playing football for their clubs. It would be very high standard, an extremely high standard in its own right. And I remember Kerrigan saying, you know, I don't know how many times that Nemo have gone down to Waterford, barely got out by the skin of her teeth, might have even been beaten on one occasion. Like, so there can be that too, insofar as but what it also does is, I suppose, it crystallizes how unglamorous it is, because a lot of these guys, as soon as any option comes along, they'll go and play hurling for Waterford as opposed to football, which speaks to Enda's point about the fact that these guys are not doing it for recognition, for profile. They're doing it because it really is a cause that they believe in. And when they get days like yesterday, you know, good luck to them. Delighted for them.
Well, I thought that came across yesterday in Cleven Walsh's interview as well, when he spoke afterwards about, look, this isn't for the glamour. You know, he's sitting there in a dressing room where, you know, there's a huge sing-song going on in the background, and all he wants to do is get back in there and enjoy today because he knows this might not happen again. When you haven't won a Munster Championship since 2010, a lot of those lads had never won anything. You know, they hadn't won a championship game of any kind since 2018. So probably, you know, the vast majority of the group had never experienced a day like that.
A win.
The other thing is, Enda, they're going to get another big day in Friarfield because that game against Clare is on the Saturday evening. The hurlers aren't playing that day. And I did laugh when I saw all the children coming onto the field after the match with hurls in their hands, which I did think was funny as well. So it does show there is people who do love both of the sports in Waterford, despite what people say. But I do think the people of Waterford who want to get behind this team will have another huge opportunity to do that. And they're 70 minutes away. If they beat Clare, they'll be playing in the Sam Maguire.
It's unbelievable.
The opportunity is absolutely massive here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Obviously, Clare will be a difficult tie, but it's not one that it's not as if they've won yesterday and they're playing Kerry. You know,
exactly.
So Clare is much more within their touching distance than Kerry or for that matter, Cork. But I would imagine they will enjoy fully yesterday. Like, even the story of the game, they'd played with the wind in the first half and point. Like, it makes no sense at all. And I'm sure as a manager, the one thing you would see, and it comes across in a couple of the results, the one thing that sort of differentiates as you slip down the division is that you can play brilliant football in moments and then you can play head-scratching stuff a lot of the rest of the time. And just for to click yesterday, and obviously in the second half, talk about the flow state and all of that. I'm sure there's not massive sports psychology or that around the Waterford footballers, but whatever that exists, that sort of X factor place that a team occasionally can get to, they got there yesterday. I'm sure they'll enjoy it, and it'll give them confidence to go. It's an absolutely no lose situation now for them going in, but they have salvaged something from what was a pretty poor season. They have really salvaged something significant yesterday, and fair play to them.
It'd be some turnover, Rory, if they could get Clare as well and suddenly find themselves playing in the Sam Maguire.
Well, it would be arguably one of the stories of the year in a sporting context, given where they finished in the National League, to find themselves in the Sam Maguire round robin stages. Look, they'll be up against it. Clare are a good side. Now, having said that, it's a Division 3 team ultimately against a Division 4 team, if you're going to put it in a pecking order context. And I think one of the things that's come through and probably feeds into maybe the points that I was making last week, and particularly in relation to the Ulster Championship, I don't actually believe, if you take the two or three teams at the bottom of Division 1 and all of the teams in Division 2 and a good chunk in Division 3, I think they're all very, very even. I think all of those teams are capable of beating each other on any given day. Then there's a drop off to a few teams in Division 4, admittedly, and that's where Waterford find themselves in. But what an opportunity. What an opportunity. And no pressure. I would consider there's absolutely zero pressure on them now. I think if they were to go in and have a rattle and see where it takes them, and then they can go off and have a rattle and see where that takes them too. You know, so I think it's a great story.
Yeah, brilliant. Not the only brilliant story of the weekend. Can we talk about Wicklow, Enda? Because I don't think, whatever about the Waterford result, suddenly that was happening and we were like, oh my God, this is crazy. But we still in our heads were watching the other screen saying, ah yeah, but Westmeath are going to come back and they're going to win this game over here. Can Wicklow hang on? And then they were chipping away. It was 2 points. It was a point. And suddenly Westmeath looked like they were getting back in the game. For Wicklow to hold them off and pull off that result, to me, I think that's the result of the weekend, because the context of taking down the Division 3 champions. And Westmeath, let's not forget, were ranked the number 2 Leinster team in the country on Saturday ahead of this weekend. And suddenly now it's all come crumbling down for them. I think that's a massive result for Wicklow.
I do. I think it's probably in terms of the Waterford victory, while brilliant, it was against Tipperary, who are also very much struggling at the minute. Westmeath are a team that's going places and going strong. Wicklow will have been disappointed with their league campaign. They'd obviously come up from four a few years ago. They were in, and they were, or last year, they were in 3, and obviously always the main thing, the main goal for the season becomes trying to stay in 3 just to give yourself some building ground. So to go back down is a tough pill to swallow. I think it will speak a wee bit towards, if teams sort of learned from what happened Mayo last year and there was some adjustment of approaches to leagues this year, I think the results with Leitrim and Westmeath this year will certainly cause give other teams food for thought. The one caveat there is the priority of promotion tends to outweigh even a championship result. But for going back to that thing I was speaking of earlier, the respect you have to have for the group and for the management team, those are really tough positions to be in when you're on a losing streak and things aren't falling your way and you've got relegated, and it's tough for the group. You have every excuse in the world to start wee whispering things in amongst the group. Oh, this isn't going right. Ah, oh, that's not good. And boy's not starting well. And really, really easy for a really caustic environment, toxic environment to take hold. They are very obviously held together. Oisín McConville has done an amazing job in doing that. And then he was saying himself, he felt there was a performance again, maybe what I was speaking of earlier, where you can see glimpses within a team of what they can produce, and you're just hoping they actually sew that together and go and give a huge performance. They done that yesterday. Like, they were excellent. And yes, Westmeath did come back at the end, but part of that is Westmeath obviously waking up and throwing the kitchen sink at it. Another position is it's exceptionally difficult for Wicklow. What, there were 7-8 points midway through the second half, I think it was. That's an exceptionally difficult position for them. It's certainly not one you can have prepared for every eventuality. They will not have prepared for that eventuality. And so those things start to pan out. But the fact that you hold on and you get over that finish line, again, just testament to the group, because the easiest thing in the world for a group in Wicklow's position is to start sort of the sort of self-destruction mode, and the season's gone. They didn't achieve the main goal for the year of staying in Division 3. Things start to fall apart, wheels off the wagon. They didn't. They refused to do that. Huge pride, obviously, within them. Got a performance, and quality footballers too, obviously. But for Oisín McConville, that was a brilliant, brilliant win. And again, you could see the emotion. You could see the emotion and what it meant to them afterwards.
Yeah, a big thing, Jackie,
is it was 1-5 to a point at half time. So obviously Wicklow played with the wind in the first half, right? I think there was three games yesterday where a team finished with 1 point. I think Leitrim had a point at half time. Enda mentioned Waterford and obviously Westmeath, which showed the elements and the influence that the elements had, which kind of makes me absolutely perplexed as why London chose to play into the wind against Galway in Ruislip. Like, I always remember Billy Morgan back in the day. You always play with the wind. Always play with the wind, because you just don't know, it could die down. And look, Wicklow took their chance. They gave themselves a really good platform, really good foothold in the game. We even saw it, I suppose, even in your game, and the fact that Cavan only went in 2 points down at half time, having played into a gale and did most of their shooting from Paddy Lynch's and off the dead balls. It shows like that the elements this time of the year now are having a much more significant impact in terms of, you know, strategy and tactics. And I think from Oisín's point of view, massive, yeah.
It's magnified because of the nature of the modern game, with the pressing of kickouts and the option to drop a man and
kick over the blanket, exactly.
Vinnie Corey's position yesterday, you know, that you would have been coming into the match thinking, right, Paddy Lynch to negate. He had his plan set up for that. He had Darren there as a sweeper, and that was the setup. But then the wind, and whether you lose the toss or get the toss, you can't know whether you're with the wind or not. But Monaghan's tactics didn't change enough for the fact that they had got the wind, and they didn't go after that game enough. Like Tony McIntyre was saying in his thing after the Sligo, that after maybe 10, 15 minutes, he felt they weren't going after it enough. They didn't push up. They wanted to push up, get the ball back quickly. Whereas lots of times yesterday, Monaghan were sitting back and they dropped off a sweeper as well. And so Cavan were just playing the running game. So the tactical change that the wind makes, more so, like, we all traditionally, it obviously allows the ball to go further, you can kick in from further, blah blah blah, but in a pressing game and with teams trying to press up or drop off, drop a sweeper or not, it makes such a massive change, particularly the strength of the wind yesterday.
All of that would be solved by pushing the championship back into May, just saying. Kamir, one other thing that I did want to touch on that you raised there, Enda, was I think just for Westmeath, and Andy Moran said this as well about Leitrim, his comments after the game quite strong as well, saying that GAA are dismissing the championship, and took aim at the GPA as well, and his own friend Tom Parsons saying that they're not doing enough to be supporting the players. I think it is interesting that both Leitrim and Westmeath looked quite leggy yesterday, looked quite tired. Take into the fact that Leitrim obviously had the huge win with the under-20s. I heard Andy saying he only had 22 players for selection yesterday, which is difficult. I do think, I guess my question is, on one sense, you said it there, that promotion maybe was more important to both of these teams, but it does seem that the sacrificial lamb is now their championship season is, it's not gone, but it certainly hasn't panned out the way they wanted to. And I wonder, would they rethink it on the basis of the position that they're in now?
I think for me, it's just clear. There's a couple of components to this. One is the physicality of it. In terms of playing week in, week out, that's tough. It's certainly attritional in terms of wee injuries. You'll nearly always pick up an injury or two in any one game. And sometimes you'll pick up the bigger injuries. That'll be several weeks. And that does take its toll. But we've seen numerous teams over time able to play on a week-on-week basis and they gain a huge momentum from it. So you can be coming in cold to a game and caught by a team that's got lots of momentum. So I'm not sure it's just the nature of the game-on-game thing.
Okay.
For me, the bigger factor is just the emotional load, and I don't mean that in a soft sense. I mean, there's only so many times in a year that a group of players can really hit that peak, that special sense in training coming into a game, that special sense in the dread before a game, that wee bit of nervous energy that you've got. And there's some games that are bigger than others. At county level, every game you have to hit a certain performance level. But for the really big moments, the really big performances, you're going to a certain place. For those teams that were pushing hard for promotion, they're in that place for 2-3 weeks because they know they're within the hunt. And so those games, that's taking a lot of energy, that's building. There's a potential, there's something there. They can either lose it at the last minute or they can fall over the line and get there. They manage to get there. Then they've got the big thing in Croke Park and they're getting the back slapped off them. They're up to Croke Park. It's a big day. They get through the final. And then there's the lull. Now they're back. They're into the grind again and it's in the provincial championship. And that then can really easily be reflected in just a flat performance, just a flatness to it. You don't have it. Like even the Cavan Monaghan game, I think that has to be factored in too, because Monaghan were trying to save themselves, Cavan knew they were sort of saved. And I think their last couple of league performances reflected that, where I think they had one eye in the championship and they were probably getting a wee bit of work in the legs and starting to just take the pressure off the players and start focusing, and then they could build up for the championship. So that emotional load, you have to pick where you're in a season not going absolutely flat out. To go flat out for league, to go flat out into the Ulster Championship without the breaks, particularly though whenever they don't get a break, and then to go flat out for the Ireland, that's peak, and that's very, very difficult. For the likes of Derry, who are like able to get away on a holiday and that is so important to try and sustain that push. But in terms of what they're hurting the GAA, Andy Moran's comments, yes, obviously on the back of that, they could say they're hurting the provincial championship by having so little gap between league and championship. But in time, that might turn to hurting the league, because if teams choose to go after the provincial championship, they'll have to hold their horses during the league. If some of the bigger teams really want to go after the All-Ireland, they might hold their horses a wee bit during the provincial championships. Like the likes of Westmeath could still have a really good championship year. And same for some of those other teams that were beaten, they can still turn it around of 6-7 weeks or 5-6 weeks now to get themselves in order, and that will get their energy back up again if it goes right within the camp. But yes, it's just, I don't think you can go flat out across everything all through the year if your calendar means you don't have a natural break somewhere in between.
I think they're just going to have to make a choice, Rory. Simple as, you know, that seems what Andy Moran was saying yesterday.
Yeah, the choice really, you took your intercounty season and concertinaed it and inserted a load of extra games, right? So you're trying to, you know, put, to get into cliche mode, put round pegs in square holes. Like it's something has got to give. And I know Eamon mentioned on your program last night, Jackie, on the Sunday game, about the fact that, look, the provincial championships maybe go first and that would help. But I think, like, Look, I think it is what it is now this year, and from all the rest of us, we look, I suppose it's just my point of view anyway, considering the amount of giving out I did about this when it first came on board, I can't really keep going on about it all that much because people are saying, like, I'm fed up of listening to him blowing on about it. But I think, look, the games are here now. Let's enjoy them. I think from the point of view of yesterday's match, I think from Monaghan's perspective, like, massive soft spot for Monaghan. It's been a tough winter for them. Obviously lost a couple of players through different mechanisms, whether it was retirements, Rory Beggan, injuries, etc. You know, they won their opening fixture and then lost every game since. I think the break might be no harm for them. And is it 6 weeks before they will get back into action again now?
6 weeks.
So I think that'll be okay. Like, I wouldn't necessarily see any panic from their point of view. Like, if you look at what happened to them last year, they had a famous win in Healy Park, where that fantastic Ryan O'Toole goal knocked Tyrone out of the Ulster Championship and then went out, I don't know, was it 2 weeks later or the following week, and got tanked by Derry. Now, look, they're out of the Ulster Championship again. They're sort of used to this. They've experienced this. Only last year, I think, if they use this break now wisely, you have to bear in mind these were in the All-Ireland semi-final last year. So they haven't just become, you know, again, cliche mode. They haven't become a dreadful team overnight. So I think if they use this break wisely, they could still have a real rattle off this round robin series later in the summer.
The only
when it eventually arrives.
Yeah, that injury to Darren Hughes though does change the dynamic of that team and though as well. And I think everybody's thinking of him today, but just his influence on the pitch and on this team and having to go back to those same Warriors, I do think that might have an impact on them yet too.
Yeah, absolutely. They do have, they would be very much hoping over the next 5-6 weeks that they would get several of their players back again. You've seen the difference that Michael Hamill made whenever he came on yesterday. If they get the likes of Bannigan, O'Hanlon, if they get those boys back.
Having Beggan back, the difference is unbelievable.
Beggan was massive for them. So Ryan McInnesby would be another huge player for them. Like, he would do a huge amount of that on glamorous work that would be Darren Hughes' hallmark too. But look, in terms of Darren Hughes, I was thinking of him coming home the road yesterday. If you could have somebody that you would just have as your epitome GA player, that just, you love everything about him, what he stands for, how he plays the game, how he conducts himself, just all of that. It's wrapped up in the likes of Darren Hughes. Now, thankfully, we're blessed with an awful lot of those type of role models, but he's absolutely one of them. And the length of his service and everything else, you're just hoping the scan results, he can be lucky or unlucky with these type of injuries. Certain structures will not respond well. Other structures, there's good surgical options and good options there in terms of management. So you really do need, whenever the laws of physics have done damage, you need a bit of luck in terms of what it's damaged. But going back to Rory, and I'm going to play devil's advocate as much with myself as with ourselves, but maybe the fact that teams can't punch all out or are caught flat at times and then other teams get a go, maybe that's a lovely thing in the year, that multiple teams can get a bounce and you can, everybody, hopefully by the end of the year, you might have something good to come in. Maybe the round robin stage, you get a couple of good wins there and suddenly your season turns back. And if at the end of the year, 10, 15 teams are sitting there with really good moments, those special moments, like whenever I rarely get out to play golf, but I'm a horrible golfer, but every now and then you connect sweet and it's the greatest sport in the world, and you're like, oh, you know what, this isn't so bad, and away on you go. Those county players that are given so much, all you need is one or two of those special wins to answer those deep-seated questions that hit you at midnight, sort of, why am I doing this, whenever the hurt is so much. So maybe the way the season is, and it is topsy-turvy and so swings and roundabouts, you get all those type of things during the year, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world either, you know, but because you mightn't have had yesterday's great results if everybody had loads of time in between it. But you can then chat about the honour to the competitions and everything else. But look, in terms of injuries, it's problematic. Certainly Darren Hughes has come the foul end of that. Monaghan, I'd agree fully with Rory. They got to the semi-final yesterday. If they get everybody back and playing well, they can absolutely build momentum in that round-robin stage. The round-robin stage is such a brilliant thing for a mid-season reset, particularly for teams knocked out early. You're 4 or 5 weeks together to circle the wagons. The grass is nice and long around you. Nobody's going to be paying attention. There's going to be hype around all the other teams going through the provinces. And we've seen that doesn't help them come the round robin stage. So if the teams that are knocked out early lick their wounds, resettle themselves and go on. The likes of Westmeath too. Yeah. I think they can still have their big moment in the summer as well.
Yeah, that's a nice thought for it all, Rory. In fairness, Enda has rounded it all off quite nicely. Beautiful. A good opening weekend. And I think probably we're all in a better place this weekend than maybe we thought we might have been on Thursday. So football is fine. Everybody's happy. It's grand. All right.
Eamon and Jim Gavin can retire their roles.
It's done. It's fine. All right, lads, come here. We'll leave it there and we'll chat hurling in just a minute.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.
All right. Ursula Jacob has joined us now to chat hurling and league title number 5 for Clare after they beat Kilkenny. And I think, Ursula, you know, good game, exciting finish. And it seems to me like the best team in the league have been rewarded for it with the trophy.
Yeah, look, they're unbeaten. They came through their group. And obviously, then in the semi-final, they were very impressive against Tipperary at stages. And then Saturday night again, I think overall, they probably did deserve it. I'd agree, it probably took it maybe, 20, 25 minutes for the game to kind of really set alight. And maybe the Adrian Mullen tackle and the Clare goal just before halftime kind of, you know, got the crowd going a little bit more, because it seemed a little bit dead at the start. But maybe that was due to maybe some of the wastefulness of Kilkenny in front of goals, which was very uncharacteristic like of Kilkenny. And then I suppose Clare came out all guns blazing in that third quarter. And like Shane O'Donnell, for someone who's missed, all of the league, hasn't really hurled in the last 6 months, and he's touched, his impact, everything was just immense in that second half. So he was a massive boost to get back, because obviously they need him now coming into championship, and especially against Limerick in 2 weeks' time. But yeah, it was a massive boost for Clare. It was badly needed. I would say Clare needed this win more than Kilkenny, because look, it's Brian Lowen's fifth year over him. They have lost the last 2 months for finals, and also to get that maybe that Kilkenny monkey off their back, because having lost the last two All-Ireland semi-finals, you know, yes, they beat them earlier in the league game in Ennis, but they needed to get silverware, and they needed to beat Kilkenny in a knockout game like that. So yeah, all positive for Clare, really.
I think that's hugely significant, Rory, yeah, for all of those reasons. For the Kilkenny factor in particular, to know that when they needed to, they could beat them. But also for Brian Lowen to actually have, lads, the plan is working.
And exactly. And they have, I think they have really positioned themselves as, without a doubt, now the number two team. You know, they beat Kilkenny twice, once at home, once in a big knockout game. To beat Kilkenny in a big game was definitely important. It was for their own self-worth, self-confidence. I don't think they were getting too I don't think they were getting too excited, and they were almost at pains to fall over themselves to show that we're not getting carried away here.
That's in spite of the fact that half of Clare was at the match and they were roaring for them to get this thing going.
Yeah, and in fairness as well, one thing you would have to say, given the absolutely abysmal attendances at most of the football matches yesterday, I thought there was a very good crowd for a league final in Thurles in the middle of a storm. And there was a good crowd. I think in fairness, Ursula is spot on. The game kind of, It was slow to get going. The first half was very tit for tat. It felt like a slow burner, and it didn't really kind of ramp up until kind of midway. Certainly once the second half kicked off, I think the Adrian Mullen one, I don't know if that would have had a huge impact. I think it was just the fact that Clare kind of went after goals that sort of sparked the crowd. Thought the officials actually had an outstanding match. And I know there were some criticisms afterwards. I thought Johnny Murphy was excellent, actually, in a lot of what he was doing. And one thing that they do seem to be picking up quite a lot on, by the way, is steps. And I was very interested and enthused and happy to see that. Not just Johnny, a lot of referees are pulling it now, you know. And I think it's going to be a really interesting feature. And I can see Ursula smirking there. Will they have the strength of will to pull such a technical foul like that in the white heat of chip in front of Venice 20,000 supporters? But it was something that they did seem to pick up on quite a lot. It was a super game towards the back end. Really, really fantastic finish to it. And I think from Clare's perspective, they stood up. Adam Hogan, my God, like what a find he is.
He's
like,
class.
Incredible. What a display. But all through their team, I think, you know, like the only thing that you'd probably say from their point of view, they didn't get minutes into Tony, but I don't think they'd be too worried to think if Tony's fit in 2 weeks' time, he'll start it regardless. He's Tony Kelly. But they did get minutes into Shane O'Donnell. Did David McInerney come on? I think he did, didn't he? Yeah. So, like, you know, form of David Reedy, the form of David Fitzgerald. Listen, they're in a happy place now, and I think it'll be into the bunker ahead of this massive game in 2 weeks' time.
Do you know, the one question on Tony Kelly, I was reading Brian Lowen's comments after the game, Ursula, and he said he was nowhere near selection, which to me is slightly worrying because the Limerick game is only 2 weeks away. And if a fella, I mean, I know people who were at the match said they saw him warming up and he looked fine and he has been doing drills during the week. But if you're a manager coming out, maybe this is just pure tactics from Brian Lowen, but if you're nowhere near selection on Saturday and suddenly 2 weeks later you're going to line out against the All-Ireland champions, something big has got to happen in this 2 week period.
Yeah, and there's a big difference, you know, participating in a warm-up or doing drills and training versus coming up against the All-Ireland champions in 2 weeks' time. And like, if you're playing against Limerick, you have to be fully right, you know, fitness-wise, in all-round, your hurling and everything. So there is that little bit of pressure there that if he is starting now. Look, Tony's an unbelievable player, one of the best players of all time, and no doubt he will have done so much work behind the scenes, but you still can't beat that match fitness. Even though, like, the likes of Shane O'Donnell, David McInerney only played maybe 15, 20 minutes there at the weekend, they still got a little bit of game time. They still got the few knocks or bangs that you do against a team like Kilkenny. You know, it is an interesting one for Clare and Brian Lowen. Like, Brian is probably not going to give away a whole lot about Tony and his fitness because obviously Limerick are waiting in the long grass for him now. But yeah, there is going to be pressure there on, and it will be interesting to see how, you know, how match ready he is, because he hasn't played in so long and the injury was rather significant. So they don't want to jeopardise the rest of his championship either for just the first game. Obviously, there's so much at stake in that first game against Limerick and they'll want to lay down a marker, but they can't risk Tony if he's not right for 2 weeks' time. They can't risk him for that one game versus against the whole of the championship.
That's the big thing, Rory, because if he's not right, you're risking that. But also, the Limerick game probably isn't the big dependent one for Clare, because they've got to go to Cork in week two. You'd imagine they're going to have to win one of those games anyway just to set themselves up. And maybe that's the game they're going to target. Who knows? I mean, I know a massive game against Limerick would set them up for later in the year, but maybe it's not the most important one either.
And they've won the league without him, Jackie. They've shown that they can cope. I mean, if you were to go back maybe 7 or 8 years ago, certainly when we'll say when they won their All-Ireland and he ended up, I think, was a young player and senior player of the year in the same year. I think he might have been.
Yeah, he was.
So, which to my mind, actually, is he the only player that's ever managed to achieve that? I think that could be the case. But anyway, look, that's neither here nor there. I think if you were to have taken Tony Kelly out of that particular Clare side, you'd say they're goosed. Their goose is completely cooked. That's not the case anymore. They've got incredible strength and depth now, right across their team in every area. And I think leaving, you know, look, the conditions I think made for a proper battle. The pitch wasn't in perfect.
It wasn't ground hurling conditions anyway. Yeah, particularly not around the goal mouth.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Jacob special pulling on one of them balls anyway.
Definitely not.
You know, like it was not. So it'll give you an indication of how much work and how much stress has been on the Munster Council and in terms of the Tipperary County Board to try and get it right for the championship. Like we were talking to Shane and Shane was even saying they were slightly nervous about it, but you could see how badly cut up it was in and around the goal. Like, and look, it's lashing rain again today. It's just the nature of the weather that we now have. But I think that probably lended itself to the sort of combative nature, which I think will be one of the most pleasing aspects from Brian Lowen's perspective in that Kilkenny came back and did the classic Kilkenny thing in nearly eking it out when you should have put them to bed on countless occasions. And Kilkenny once again, you know, showed that incredible resolve that just how many stakes do you have to drive through them before you can actually kill them off? And that's the one thing you'll always be sure of every Kilkenny team. They showed it again in spades the other night. The big problem for them was, and I noticed this even before it became into the narrative, so I'm sure it was a common theme right across the weekend. Their shot selection in the first 20 minutes was very unusual for them as well, insofar as they were kind of snatching at shots. They were taking on shots, pot shots that probably weren't really the right selection. They had a couple of instances. I saw at one stage, Sean Donnelly was inside with his arms up in the air, you know, as if to say, just put the ball into me. And Adrian Mullen, I think, pulled one wide. When you're playing with a Gale into it or with it, it is still tricky to judge and figure that wind out. And I think that is some of the things that I think that'll probably upset Derek Ling, that they will probably need to work on. But I think the fact that they've got themselves back into a game so late, never went away, kept going. You know, I mean, a couple of things from Owen Cody's perspective. Did Owen Cody only get his first point? Did he get his first score with 20 minutes to go?
Yeah.
Something that's going to need to be rectified. They need a little bit more from him earlier in the game, and they will. But I thought it was a top-class contest overall, despite the fact that, you know, nearly both teams were falling over themselves to play it all down.
Yeah, I think the other big question, though, Ursula, really is what do they do when TJ's not on the field? Because a lot of that shot selection is, you know, TJ's a very calming presence, not just for what he actually does on the scoreboard, but it's for what he does around. His movement inside, the way he plays the ball, the way he puts other people into the right positions. I thought they really, really missed him on Saturday.
Without a doubt, and it just shows the reliance they still have on him. And the biggest thing for me, you just mentioned it, Jackie, is how he's able to bring the others into the play around him. Like, that's probably one of his biggest pluses, aside from all the scoring and everything that he can do. But Kilkenny at times, I'd agree with Rory, their distribution into the forward line was very, very poor at times from the half back line. They were probably trying to do that route one long ball in, but TJ wasn't there Saturday night, so they didn't have that kind of focal point like they did against Limerick in the semi-final, where he was on the edge of the square. Now, to be fair, Mossy Keogh and John Donnelly, I think they did stand up, but they probably didn't get enough from the other guys in the forwards. Luke Hogan, Billy Drennan were taken off, Billy Ryan, like they probably only got a point maybe between them. So yes, they were down TJ, they were down Walter Walsh, you know, they won't overly panic, but they would be very, very disappointed that maybe they didn't get more from some of the guys. But I would owe some to the fact that the ball that was going in wasn't good enough. You know, there was maybe a sense of panic. I'm not really sure what it was. And as I said, it was very much unlike Kilkenny, because you expect them to look up, head up hurling, hitting the ball into space. But to be fair, Owen Cody, like, he only got a point in the second half near the end. But Adam Hogan was stuck to him like glue. Like, he didn't give him an inch. He didn't give him any space. As big as Burles was, wherever Owen Cody was, Adam Hogan was right there behind him. And I'd absolutely hate to be marking him. So best of luck to whoever is going to be taking him on in the Munster Championship.
He's going to have a good detail, I think, for the rest of the summer. That's for sure. The one thing is for Kilkenny, though, Ursula, nothing really changes for them, because I still think the Leinster Championship for them, they still know they're going to come out. They still have an awful lot of time to work it out. Whereas, like, you're right in what you said about Clare. The difference is really for them. But I think for Derek Ling, he'll say, Grant, we didn't play well on the day, but we've proven against Limerick. We have the spine of the team. We have answered a lot of those decisions. And if we can clean up some of that distribution, they're still in the top 3-4 teams in Ireland. And, you know, I don't think he needs to panic for all of those reasons.
I definitely felt, and even listening to him afterwards, I don't think he'll do panic, because, you know, they reached the league final. Yes, they were down a couple of players. Like, there's some big guys to come back. Obviously, TJ, Walter Walsh, Mikey Butler, Mikey Carey. Like, these guys will slot into the team. I'm being honest, I still would worry a little bit about the centre-back position. I know there's been a lot of talk. Like, I thought Mark Rogers was so, so effective on that half-forward line. Now, I know Paddy Deegan was picking him up. Tommy Walsh came out on him. But, like, Mark Rogers got 2 points from play. He got 1-5 in assists. The two goals that Aidan McCarthy got were long deliveries from Clare puckouts. And I felt Kilkenny were very poor on the breaking ball on the half-back line. So I would think they would have to tighten up that little bit on that line of defence. But they've the time to do it. You know, they've Antrim in the first round of Leinster. It would have to be a massive shock if they didn't get through Leinster and finish in the top three, if not make the Leinster final. So there's lots of positives. There's lots to work on. As you said, they look dead and buried, but still they could have won it in the end. Like, what if TJ had been on the field? He would have stepped up to take that penalty.
Exactly.
You'd be reckoning he would have scored. So there were very, very little in it in the end, and lots to take away for Derek and his management team.
And
nobody worries about Kilkenny, Rory.
No. The only one thing that when I was reading Eddie Brennan this morning, and Eddie would always give a very, I find that he would always give a very honest appraisal of maybe how the internal Kilkenny mindset is operating currently. And the fact that he made a very prescient point insofar as that's four national finals in 2 years that Kilkenny have been beaten in. Now, they've lost both National League finals back-to-back and both All-Ireland finals. Now, you have to get into these finals, obviously, to lose them and to win them. And the fact that they're still competing in those finals is a hell of a lot better than a lot of other counties. But I suppose the point being, it's not necessarily a habit we associate with them. And I think it'll be something that'll rankle a little bit, be in there a little bit of, you know, it'll sit back there somewhere. I think they have a fairly soft launch into the Leinster Championship. I think they're playing Carlow in the first round. So, you know, in terms of the real hurling for Kilkenny, probably won't really begin until they meet Galway and then obviously a Leinster final. But yeah, like they'll still be in the mix.
Don't forget Wexford, Rory.
Yeah. Listen, I picked you as one of my three to come out. Don't you worry about that.
No, but I'm saying Kilkenny and Wexford is the last number of years, to be fair. Wexford have had the upper hand. So big I wouldn't time, yeah. be just saying yeah. it'll be Kilkenny. This is me speaking from a Wexford point of view, but genuinely, Wexford will have a big say, I reckon, as well, and possibly could reach a Leinster final.
Good woman. You've done your bit for your county. Yeah. Well, let's let you do your bit for your game as well, Ursula, before we finish up on talking hurling and Camogie, because I think you're going to have Camogie this weekend, front and centre, getting a lot of attention on the pitch. But this weekend, again, a lot of attention off the pitch. And the biggest thing we're talking about again is a motion at Congress defeated for not allowing the players the decision to wear something other than skorts, which have been in the game long time, since even before you and I ever started playing. And it feels like another step back for the organisation.
Yeah, and I find it very frustrating because, again, the Camogie side of things is making headlines for the wrong reasons. You know, I wish it was a positive thing that we should be looking forward to the league finals this weekend and fantastic games are going to be shown on the television. But now all the focus is on the fact that the motion was defeated again. And I suppose it's the repeated calls from players who are at the heart of the Camogie Association. It's pretty mind-boggling at this stage because, to me, the player's voice should be heard. You know, we've constantly been fighting. It's like a constant fight. That's what I feel like it is, you know, in relation to the player's voice. They know what's most comfortable to wear. Why not accommodate? If it's more comfortable for a player to wear a short, like I know myself, not one girl I know wears a skirt at training. Everyone wears shorts. It's more comfortable. It's more flattering in lots of ways. And girls, I suppose, feel that at this day and age, they should even be given the option. A choice should be there. And the people that are probably making the decisions are people that haven't either A, played the game or haven't played the game in a long, long time. I think we need to move with the times. Things develop, things progress. You know, the game has progressed, thankfully, in a positive way. But we need to progress the rules. We need to make amendments and we definitely need to listen to the players. And definitely you can see the frustration and the outcry from any players I've been speaking to, and not just at county level, but at club level also. And I would be hoping that maybe the association might maybe listen to the players and maybe they could reverse the motion. I'm not sure can that happen, but why continue with the motion if it's just not comfortable for the players?
The one thing we might see, though, is that this might spill over again, Ursula, because we had players last year about going on strike. We had players doing different protests ahead of games. And just given the information that I'm getting from players and talking to them, they are really, really annoyed about this. And I think this might spill over this weekend again.
I don't think it's going to go away lightly. I think the players, you know, thankfully they're demanding standards and that's what they fought for last year. And they were looking for that player's charter. And I think this will continue going into the summer and into the championship. And I think you will see county teams standing alongside together. And I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's not that we want constant strikes or we want this going on and on, but the players have a right to voice their opinion. And if the only way that they'll be heard is maybe coming together again and finding the best way forward, and if that is with players going out wearing their shorts and matches, maybe that's what has to happen. But you would prefer that it didn't get to that stage, that maybe, you know, county boards or the Camogie Association would come together and, you know, find a solution, even some sort of compromise. and take a baby step in terms of giving the players the option. Because I guarantee if there was a survey done right now today and you asked club and county players, which would you prefer? I would be shocked if it wasn't anything above 95% in favour of wearing shorts. So it's just, I suppose, I'm a retired player now, but I just think, why not? If players are looking for a change in that regard, you know, it can be very simply changed. And I would be hoping that we do see that very, very soon.
And Jackie, leave aside the, look, I suppose this is the eye of the beholder, but for me, leave aside the antiquated and old-fashioned image that the Scots actually represent. I just think about it from a club perspective, right, whereby you already have a situation at club level where young players, female players, have to pay a like, because most players at club level, did you play football, Ursula? I presume?
No. With schools, I did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. But most players at club level are playing, are dual players, right? They'll play hurling and football at club level. So why you have one set of gear for one code, and you know, even from a purely financial point of view, and just the practical nature of it, you're already in a situation where they're paying fees to the LGFA and the Camogie Association separately. So now you have to have your playing gear, which is separate as well. And this is in the era when we're meant to be talking about integration and making things easier for people. I don't know. It's a very odd. I'd love to know who made those decisions. I wonder, is it mostly men?
Yeah, but just one point on top of that, we want to continue to grow the game and participation. You don't want to be driving girls away from it. Like, if this, you know, if it annoys people that much in wanting to wear skirts and having to be being forced into wear it, you know, you'll just find girls stepping away and just playing ladies football or whatever else. So you want to continue the growth of Camogie, not take players away from the game because they're just getting so frustrated by constant kind of rules like this.
Yeah, I think everybody's getting frustrated with talking about stuff that happens off the pitch as well. Wouldn't it be great if we were in a situation with two brilliant league finals to look ahead to, which are live on television at the weekend, you could be just talking about that too? And I know that that's the way that the players feel. But look, we're going to have to leave it there. Ursula, thanks a million for being with us today. Don't forget to like and follow wherever you get your podcasts. And we will be back on Thursday to look ahead to another fantastic weekend of Gaelic games. And we'll talk to you then.
Oh, there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.